Scripture reading is Hebrews, first chapter, verses 1 and 2. Long ago, at many times and in many ways, God spoke to our fathers by the prophets. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed the heir of all things, through whom also he created the world.
Good evening, church. I ran across an interesting story about a race. A fellow named James was in the front. He'd gone 2 3/4 laps. There were only 4 laps to go. A lap and a quarter is still to go, but he was in the front. He was very confident. He was convinced he was going to win this race. It was his race to win. And he was way ahead of everybody else. But there was a fella in the back named Antonio who said, he's a little overconfident. I think I can take him. And so what he did is he stayed right back in the back, and all of a sudden when he got 2 3/4 laps around, he started moving toward the front, and he got right behind him. On the last lap, James turned around, and Antonio, he could smell something. It was the sweat on Antonio's breast because he was right behind him. And so all of a sudden they get to the very end, and Antonio runs to the front and he wins the race. And there's all kinds of cheering and cheering and cheering. And the two of them think they're cheering for us because, you know, one came in first, the other came in second, and that's the reason they're cheering. But in reality, when they turned around, they saw that wasn't what they were cheering about at all. There was another fellow who had started the race but was convinced he was going to finish it one way or another. And he apparently had pulled a hamstring somewhere in the race. And the other folks who were running the race with him took turns giving him a hand to get across the race. And the folks were cheering because they were finishing the race. Not for the winners, but for the folks who finished the race because they've gone through all of that turmoil. Our text is an interesting one this evening. It's about running this race. You'll remember at the end of chapter 10, he basically had said, "Don't give up, endure, hold on to your faith." And then he gave us that wonderful chapter 11 where he talks about what faith really is and gives us heroes of the faith. Now he's calling folks to commitment. He wants them to be committed and to endure the race. And we begin with what I think is a mixed metaphor. Let me turn it on. There we go. It begins as follows. "Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us." I think it's a mixed metaphor. Did you notice the key word there is the word witness? There's a great cloud of witnesses. In reality, it's a race, and they are sort of the folks cheering them on, but they're more than that. They are witnesses. That's a law court terminology. These are folks who have come to the stand to testify. It's the folks of faith that he just talked about in chapter 11. They are witnesses. They say, "You can run the race. You can finish. You can endure. You can do it." And I guess the other folks may be spectators, but they're more than spectators. They are giving them the evidence. They are pledging and saying, "We do solemnly swear you can do it. We're testifying. We're giving you the evidence. We've enjoyed this life, this race, and the race is yet before us." He's really appealing to these people to demonstrate the same quality of faith and faithfulness that those people of faith in chapter 11 had. And so he's calling them to run the race. The image is a foot race, and it's a really pretty good one. Notice he says that you need to lay aside every encumbrance. And that may well be referring to what they do. You know, they're wearing long robes, and ladies can appreciate that more than men can. You imagine running with a long dress, ladies. You can appreciate it a lot more than guys can. But they've got these long robes, and before they run the race, they're going to take those robes off and shed those robes, and that's an encumbrance. It'll get in the way. But then he says, "And also the sin that so easily besets us." Now, it's really interesting. The first one, I don't think, is something that is bad in and of itself. There are all sorts of encumbrances that get in our way of running the race that's before us. They are things that are okay in and of themselves, but they just get in the way. And he says those things that get in the way, you've got to put aside, whatever they may be. It may be the wrong kind of associations. It may be engagement in things that are going to hinder your running the race. But whatever it is, you've got to lay that aside. And then the handicap of sin itself. Sin can get in the way. And again, if you're living a life of sin, you can appreciate that. I don't think it's a single sin, but it is sin. Listen to what he says next. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of the faith, for the joy set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. I love this language. You got to keep your eye on the goal at the end. You know, when you're running a race, you can't look back and look at the other fellows behind you because you're going to trip up and you're not going to do well. You can't look at the folks around you who are running the race. You got to keep your eye on the goal. And there's a real danger that you'll look back or think about the training you've had to go through and all the hardships. You can think about the wrong things instead of the goal that is there. And we're supposed to fix our eyes on Jesus. You see, Jesus becomes the one who has run the race before us. And I love the language he uses here. He is the author and perfecter of the faith. Now, that word author is an unusual word that doesn't appear very many times, but the author of Hebrews really likes it. It's a word that can be translated author, captain, forerunner. He ran it before us. I like pioneer. You know, a pioneer are the folks who come and they will get in the land and get it all settled before we ever get there. They'll build the first houses. They'll make the first bridges. They're going to do all of those things. He's the pioneer. He's the hero. He's the champion of the race. Jesus has run this race before us. But listen to the way he ran it. You notice that the language is really quite striking. He's the perfecter of the faith, the one who brings it to its end, to its goal. He makes life possible. But do you notice these words of encouragement? When we're tempted to give up, we need to consider Jesus. He got weary, but he never gave up. He had jeers and taunts and flogging and even crucifixion, but he hung in there. And he hung in there with all of this struggle. I like this part. He endured the cross. Endured. That's the big word here. Endure. Hang in there. Don't give up. Despising the shame. What was the hardest for Jesus? Do you think it was the pain he had to go through? You know, getting those nails driven in his hands and being beaten and hanging on the cross? Or is it the shame of it all? You know, that's not the kind of thing that an innocent person ought to have to go through. You know, he's innocent and he's facing all of that shame for us, despising the shame. And then he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. It's sort of like you'll run the race and then they'll call you up on stage and say, they'll put a laurel on their head and not a gold medal. We expect a gold medal. They'll put a laurel on your head and say, have a seat right next to the judges because you've been victorious. And so he's done all of that. It's a wonderful account. We're running a race. Our life is very much a race, and it's a long distance race. It's not a little sprint. You got to run it all the way through, and you can't give up. You got to keep on keeping on, even when it seems so tough. Then he goes on to say, consider him who endured such hostility by sinners against himself so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. I want you to think about what Jesus went through so you don't give up. He didn't give up despite all that he had to face. And I don't want you to grow weary and lose heart, give up. I want you to keep on keeping on. And that becomes important. He continues by saying, "You have not resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin." None of them had been martyred for their faith yet. You know, here are folks, these are Jewish folks who are living in probably the diaspora outside Palestine, and they're out there living this life, and they face some persecution, but none of them have died for their faith yet. And so he says, you haven't died yet. It may get worse, but you can keep on keeping on. You need to keep striving against sin. The word striving is an interesting word that's rather rare. It's a word, if I just pronounce the English word that comes from it, you may recognize it. It's the word antagonize. You're facing it, you're working against it. You're working against whatever this is, this obstacle that is in your place. And then he goes on to say, you have forgotten the exhortation that is addressed to you as sons. You have forgotten this message. Here's this message that God gave us, and he's got this wonderful Old Testament quote. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. So they're not supposed to take this exhortation lightly. They're to take it very seriously. It's interesting because the whole idea is that God is disciplining us. Now, he's going to go on to talk about discipline. Now, you might remember when you were disciplined as a child. Being the oldest of four sons, I got the blame for everything. You know, the others may have done it, and they may be the guilty ones, but because I was the oldest, I was responsible, or at least I was supposed to be responsible, and so I got to take the blame most of the time. And sometimes I got punished wrongly. It is for discipline that you endure. That's why you are enduring, hanging in there, because God is trying to train you and get you prepared. God deals with you as sons. What son is there whom his father does not discipline? I got plenty of spankings when I was a little boy, you know, for misbehaving, or at least scoldings, you know, those kind of scoldings. I didn't spank my daughters very much, but I did scold them frequently. But that kind of discipline is very real. What son is there whom his father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, which of you have become partakers, you're illegitimate children and not sons. If God isn't disciplining you and training you a bit and giving you some hardships that you have to face and live through, then you're really not one of his sons. Because he is training you. Now, the part that is really interesting is, furthermore, he says, we have earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. When our parents disciplined us, we said, okay, yeah, most of the time I was guilty and I got what I deserved, and so we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? If you respected your parents, then you really ought to respect God the Father. Because he's in charge, and he's a better disciplinarian than your parents were. For they disciplined us for a short time, as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. For a short time, our parents disciplined us until we got to be old enough that we were kind of on our own. You know, you kind of grew out of that. And so it's a short time, and it is as seemed best to them. Did they get it all right? No. Did you get it all right when you were parents? No. Did I sometimes punish the wrong daughter? I'm sure I probably did, and yell at the wrong daughter. My oldest daughter would tell me the same thing that I've said. She would say that she got the blame because she's the oldest one. I'm not sure that she did. Sometimes I think she was sort of egging the others on. But indeed, you punish as seems best. And it really is designed to become, the design of that is to help them to become a better people. And so all of that, I think, is significant. It is, again, as seems best to them. But notice when God disciplines us, it is for our good. When we're facing hardship, he says, and I know you guys are facing it, because they were facing persecution, and the persecution was indeed going to get worse. He says he's doing it for your good, for our good. And it's interesting because a lot of things that we've gone through, and as you look back on some of those hardships that you faced, indeed, you came out of it a stronger person because of what God has done for you. It is so that you can share His holiness, His purity, His pure life. You can be like Jesus, who ran the race first and won the race and is victorious and is guaranteeing you that you can be victorious as well. And our last verse tonight, all discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful. I don't think it was ever pleasant when my parents punished me. And I'm convinced my daughters didn't ever consider it was pleasant when they were punished either. But he goes on to say, it's not sorrowful. It didn't seem to be joyful, but it seemed to be sorrowful. And yet, to those who have been trained by it, afterwards, it yields a peaceful fruit of righteousness. The end result will be this peaceful fruit. This everything is together. And peace, by the way, is a very important word in the Old Testament. I love that word peace. It's the word shalom. Nice word. And it's interesting because if anybody wanted peace, I think it was David. He names his capital city Jerusalem, which is literally city of peace. He names his firstborn son, the one that he so thinks will be victorious, he names him Absalom, father of peace. Because he wants that son to bring peace. Does he bring peace? No, he causes all kinds of turmoil. And then he'll name the son who will take over after him, Solomon, which is peaceable one. Peace, peace, peace. Did he ever know peace? No, he never really knew it. He never got to see the end result of it. But this whole idea of peacefulness, everything is together. It's all like it ought to be. And it's this fruit of, it grows out of living the righteous life. I think this is a wonderful passage. It's about a race, and that all of us need to see our life as a race that we're running. And it's a race that we're running to the glory of God. May we indeed be folks who run that race and finish the race, endure. And that's the word that runs all the way through this text. Endure, endure, endure. And so we must run the race and endure to the very end. We may have touched on, some important themes, I hope, as we're working our way through Hebrews. I hope you're enjoying this study of Hebrews that as we work our way through the book. And I'm going to keep doing it for several more weeks. But it's a wonderful book about these folks who are struggling. And we face struggles as well. May we endure. May we hang in there to the end. We're going to sing an invitation song, and it may be that some of you need to respond to that invitation one way or another. Perhaps you need to come and confess Jesus as Lord and for the first time be buried in baptism and begin to walk this race, run this race. Perhaps there are others who need prayers. And again, we'd be glad to assist you in either of those. If you need to come, would you come as we stand and as we sing?